Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, 1945, Beast, 8 hours don't make a day. Hi, David, how are you? I was practicing for the Academy Awards.
And you did splendidly, and I'm sure that your Oscar is right around the corner.
All right, thank you.
I know that you like to sometimes, when we give multiple titles, you like to try to make sentences out of them. And since it's hard to make a sentence out of 1945 and Beast, our third film, the title is a sentence. 8 hours don't make a day.
And then you could just add 1945 Beast, 8 hours don't make a day. And it's somewhat nonsensical, but people could figure it out.
It has a nice sort of poetry to it.
There you go.
But let's go back to our very first one for today, 1945, which is something that we don't have in movie theaters all that often, which is a Hungarian film. We do have them from time to time. And just a very few years ago, there was a really amazing Hungarian film called Son of Saul, which took place in a Nazi concentration camp. And there are also Hungarian films from time to time from a very great filmmaker named Béla Tarr, who has become a big star on the art film circuit. This movie, 1945, is directed by one Ferenc Torak, and it is another Holocaust film, like Son of Saul was a few years ago, but it's a very, very, very different kind of one. So it takes place, get ready for this, in 1945. Spoiler alert. And it all starts when a couple of people arrive in this little Hungarian town in the year 1945. And immediately the town is very much on edge. Now, the town has been getting ready to celebrate a wedding. And the wedding, as we find out fairly early in the movie, is already undergoing some strains. That is to say, not everybody is happy about this wedding. I'll just put it that way. So we have what could appear to be a sort of a family drama and a sort of a romantic drama with this wedding about to take place and different loyalties and different people feeling different ways about different people involved in this impending marriage. But then these two strangers come to town. And everybody is very, very interested in them. And immediately this becomes much more interesting for the viewer, too, than the wedding, which is about to take place. These are a couple of Orthodox Jewish strangers. And it turns out that there is a whole lot of guilt from the World War II era and from the Holocaust era, which is really just barely over. It's been over for about 2 seconds when this movie takes place. And there is a whole lot of guilt and a whole lot of unhappiness now. Why have these two people arrived here? Are they going to try to get back property which was seized and confiscated and purloined by all kinds of non-Jewish people when the horrible evils started to be perpetrated on the Jews of the town and the Jews of the country and the Jews, of course, of most of Europe? Or is something else going on here? Are they looking for vengeance of some sort? Are they involved with one of the people? I mean, are they connected with one of the people who suffered particularly awful consequences while all the horrors of the Holocaust were going on? And that is what the movie is about. And it is really very much about the human relations within this town and the things that are brought out in various different people's personalities in various different ways through this coming together of these two things which are happening at once, which is the wedding, which everyone has been expected and which already has tensions connected with it, and then the arrival of these two Jewish strangers and the emergence of all kinds of guilt and nervousness and anxiety surrounding them for very good reasons. I think every time I talk about a Holocaust movie, I like to quote my good friend Stuart Kluwan, who was the excellent film critic for The Nation, who once, when somebody, he mentioned a Holocaust movie to somebody, and somebody said, "How many Holocaust movies do we need? Because there seem to be so many of them." And Stuart answered, "Well, it's a good question. How about, for starters, we say 6 million? And I think that that's a really extraordinarily insightful remark, because we can never spend too much of our time, and that includes through the art of film, trying to understand what happened during that one of the most horrendous periods in, I suppose, all of human history. We can never spend too much time exploring it, and there are always different ways to approach it. And 1945 is another one of those ways. Hungarian film, a film very much about Hungarian experience in the immediate aftermath of World War II, and it's not a masterpiece. It's not as good as Son of Saul, which I considered, I think, the best movie of that year. But it's a very, very good film, and I really do recommend it. Anybody with an interest in the Holocaust or in modern European history should definitely see 1945. Turning to another kind of horror, Beast is a new movie, obviously, and it is it's a British movie, and it was made by a pretty new filmmaker named Michael Pierce, and it is what you might call a psychological horror movie. We've been having actually quite a few of those lately, and it's a genre I rather like. So we are now out of the horrors of history and into the horrors of simply human nature. We have a young woman. She's around in her middle 20s. Her name is Moll, and the film begins at her birthday party, and we immediately discover a couple of things about her. One is that her family is pretty sort of domineering and oppressive. Her mother especially likes to control everybody around her, and then we pretty soon learn that Moll has a rather troubled psychological history, and so her mother actually feels an obligation to sort of always be controlling Moll. By the way, they live on this isolated community on the island of Jersey, so they're not exactly in the middle of the big city or anything. They're sort of out in the boondocks, as we say. So that's one thing we learn about Moll very early in the film. Another thing we learn is that she has been a troubled young woman, and she is now a very troubled young woman. In fact, during her own birthday party, which is the first thing that happens in the film, she sort of goes into the kitchen, breaks a glass, and slices her hand with it. And then she goes off to sort of a local a club and spends the rest of the night dancing. And while she is there, she meets a young man named Pascal. And she gets involved with him pretty quickly. And the next thing you know, they are a romantic couple. Now, something else is going on during all of this. We have our troubled young woman, Moll. We have her somewhat rough-hewn new boyfriend, Pascal. And there are serial killings going on the island. Young women, not unlike Moll, are being killed and found, their corpses found somewhere or other. And then, wouldn't you know, Pascal, the somewhat rough-hewn new boyfriend of Moll, turns out to be a suspect in these killings. And that is the setup for the movie, and we spend the rest of the movie finding out what happens with these dynamics. And the mother, whose name is Hillary, she remains very much a major character in it too, with her constant trying to keep Moll under control. This is a movie where a whole lot of things are not under control, and that is where the interest of it lies. This is one of these films which has been getting absolute rave reviews from about a jillion critics all over the place. I don't think it's worthy of rave reviews. It's a very, very well-made movie, and Jesse Buckley's performance as our, in her middle to late 20s main character, Moll, is absolutely excellent. She's terrific. The guy who plays Pascal, his name is Johnny Flynn. He's very good, too. The whole cast is good, but Jesse Buckley really carries the movie as Moll. It's a very suspenseful movie. At times, I found it a little bit on the incoherent side. It was trying to put across plot points without doing so very effectively. For the most part, though, it has a good dramatic momentum, and it has a major total surprise twist in something like the last 30 seconds of the movie, which I certainly won't give away, and which I found, not the most original thing in the world, but it is surprising, and it is very hard-hitting, and it certainly puts an unexpected capstone on the movie. So if you go to see Beast, definitely stay for the last minute or so, because in a way, it's the best part. But it's a very effective thriller, very well acted, and I do think that Michael Pierce is a filmmaker from whom we will be hearing a good deal more in the future. Our third film for today, 8 Hours Don't Make a Day, is very unusual in a whole lot of respects. For one thing, it's 7.5 hours long. So, you know, approximately. So not exactly 8 hours, but getting up there. And in fact, it's not really a movie at all. It was made as a television miniseries way back in 1972. And it is now playing in American theaters. Theaters are sort of sometimes showing it all together, where you come in and I guess you buy lots of popcorn and lots of coffee or whatever it is. And you sit there and you watch it. And then also showing it in segments where you can see maybe three different see it in thirds or something, which would make it more manageable. It's by Rainer Werner Fassbinder. Some people would consider him the greatest German filmmaker of all time. He was certainly an amazing filmmaker, and that is worth a word itself now, because I know that he is not exactly a household name. Although back in his prime, he was enormously famous, and his movies came to America all the time. He made, while he was living, way over 40 movies. Now that's including feature films. It's including a couple of miniseries. His film Berlin Alexanderplatz, made in 1980, is about 16 hours long. And it was made as a TV miniseries, but it's generally considered a movie and one of the longest movies ever made. But he made I'm just going to cut to the chase here. He made well over 40 movies. All of them he directed. Many of them he wrote. A lot of them he acted in, even starred in some of them. And during the same period, he was acting in movies for other people, producing movies for other people, doing work in the theater, doing work on the radio. And he died when he was 37. So this is one of the most astoundingly productive people I think who has ever trod the planet. Somebody who could do all of this work, including way over 40 movies as a director, in a very, very small amount of time. He was also a very problematic human being. This is very well known about him. He could be very unpleasant. I met him once. He was perfectly pleasant to me. I interviewed him once. But he was, he had his problems, and he died through drugs and alcohol, which is one of the ways that he managed to do all this sustained level of achievement for this limited number of years. He was driving himself in all kinds of ways that were not healthy for him. But one of the things he made along the way was this film back in 1972, this miniseries called 8 Hours Don't Make a Day. And after being shown on German television, it was sort of vanished from sight for a long time, and recently it has been restored, which is to say that the film that it was made on has been taken out of the archive and it's been put through electronic procedures to clean it up and make it look the way it looked back when it was new. And again, it has now been reissued, and it is coming to some American theaters. So one of my reasons for talking about it this week is I want to salute the theaters that are breaking the mold and showing this very unusual production. And also, it's good to have a really major work by Fassbinder back in circulation again, however briefly. So, what is it about? 8 Hours Don't Make a Day is the subtitle is a family series, because it was made for German television and they wanted to have a family series, a series that would be about families and a family about families, and that would be watched by families. And it is also about workers, because it is about working class people. Fassbinder made his movies generally speaking about sort of sometimes the middle class, because he was very interested in critiquing ordinary conventional bourgeois life, and sometimes about outsiders, criminals, and that sort of thing. But in this case, he makes a movie about a family. One of the main members of the family, a young man named Jochen, is a factory worker. And we also have a lot of stuff that takes place at the factory where he works and labor actions, and they're trying to improve things. For themselves and for the factory in general. And of course, there's a love affair brought into it. Fassbinder's most famous and most wonderful actress, Hannah Shigula, plays a character named Marion, who marries Jochen. Also, there is a grandmother, and she is one of the main characters, and she is absolutely wonderful. And then there's her boyfriend, who is an old, old man, and anyway, all kinds of characters floating around in this thing. Fassbinder was a very bleak filmmaker. He had a very despairing view of the human condition. 8 Hours Don't Make a Day is almost certainly the most upbeat, optimistic, look on the bright side thing he ever did. He wanted it to be 8 episodes long. The last 3 episodes, which he wrote, were going to be much more downbeat. And that would have changed what I just said if they had been filmed. But in fact, looking at his scripts, the German TV people said back in 1972, we like it the way it is, and we don't want to go ahead and let him film the last three episodes that he had in mind. So the thing ends after five episodes, and it has a nice ending. It's rounded off nicely. And it does retain this very optimistic, upbeat, life really isn't so bad after all kind of flavor to it. I recommend 8 Hours Don't Make a Day very, very highly. If it's playing anywhere near anyone, and if you have about 7.5 hours to spare, I strongly recommend going off and seeing it. It's a great introduction to the work of Fassbinder, and it's just a whole lot of fun to watch in its own right. And so that is my mini-series of a story this week, Jill.
And thank you very much for that mini-series of a story. David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films 1945, Beast, and 8 Hours Don't Make a Day.